We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
This is Focus. I'm David Inge. Glad to have you with us. And we're very happy to have back on the program once again, Sandy Mason. She's a horticulture educator for U of I Extension, Champaign County. Once a month, she is on the program on a Tuesday, and we talk about things that grow in the home landscape. This is one of these topics that are how-to kind of things, and we have built them into the show so that on a fairly predictable basis, you can know that there'll be someone here who has knowledge in a particular area. And Sandy's the one who is here when it comes to things that grow in the home landscape. So you can take advantage of what she knows about trees and shrubs, about lawn, about flowers, about house plants, about things that you could plant in the garden and you would eat. Any and all of that is certainly welcome. Just pick up the telephone and give us a call, and we'll hook you up with Sandy. 333-9455. Toll free, 800-222-9455. If you'd like to send us an email, you can do that too. will-talk@illinois.edu. And something really special and cool and new that we're going to do here this time around. After the show, for half an hour, between 11 and 11:30, Sandy will be hosting a live chat, and that way can answer additional questions and respond to listener comments. And if you'd like to get involved in that, just go to our homepage, our regular webpage, WILL.illinois.edu. And I think prominently you'll see her lovely smiling face prominently featured at the top.
Whether they want to or not.
And so that people can do that. This is something we've been doing that now with Illinois Gardener for a few weeks. And it's yet another way to give people a chance to ask questions and get information. And I think this probably was Sean Power's idea. Well, when you're here during the week for the radio thing, why not do that? And so we'll see.
So I think it's going to be a lot of fun because it's, you know, very interactive. You know, it's obviously this is interactive too, but it really is an opportunity very quickly, you know, if somebody has a comment or even if something we talk about here on this show, maybe someone thinks about something later or I think about something later that pertains to that question, we can sort of continue that whole conversation on the online chat. So hopefully people will join me for that.
Okay. And again, we'd be very happy to take questions. You want to give us a call, 333-9455 for Champaign-Urbana, toll free 800-222-9455. You can also email us at will-talk@illinois.edu. I think probably the last time you were here, it was still feeling like it was late winter. And now it really is spring, and we've already blown past snowdrops, and we got daffodils, and I got tulips in my yard, and things are blooming away. So it seems like, yeah, it really is spring.
Yeah. And the nice thing is that the weather, even though, you know, we've kind of had this up and down, it really is still cooperating. So, you know, many times we get, especially things like magnolias and stuff where you get that really late frost. Mm-hmm. Let's hopefully we're past that, but that's not necessarily true. People do have to remember that, you know, it can still frost. So it's not that we're past all that. And actually, it can still frost up until really mid-May. It can still frost. So if you have anything of those tender things, whether some of the herbs like basil, or even things like tomatoes, peppers, things that like that warmer weather, you know, it's a little iffy to try to put things out right now. Yeah. So people do have to keep that in mind. And even things like houseplants and stuff, you know, if you are going to take them outside, really watch the weather, and you may have to bring them in or cover them or something like that.
Yeah, I think that we're still maybe like 10 days away from the average date for last frost.
It's hard to believe.
So, and as you say, it certainly, you could have it happen even past that point.
Yeah, we get lulled into, you know, we get these high 70s, even low 80 temperatures, and it kind of gets us into this idea that we're into summer, and that's just not true. Yeah. So Mother Nature bats last. That's what I always say.
Did you make that up? No, you didn't. We have a couple of callers here. They're both in Urbana, so we'll get right to them. And start with line one in Urbana. Hello.
Hi. I have a couple of questions about an arborvitae. And I have a row of them in the backyard, and they have been attacked by scale. Mm-hmm. And I cut quite a bit of it out last year, and one of the trees is dead, and ones around it still have some of that. So I have a couple of questions. If I cut out all the dead tree and I can see the scale on it, what is the proper way to dispose of that? I have it in a recycling bag, but I'm loath to pass it on it to anybody else by having it picked up and composted kills it.
Right. Well, really, in the composting process, especially like the landscape recycling center, really through the composting process, it pretty well gets done. I mean, as in it kills it off.
Right, okay.
Just by the fact that it gets smothered and all that kind of stuff. It was sort of laying on top of the pile. That'd be a different case. But by the time it gets composted, it's really probably not going to be the issue. And so, and you've had this, you know, its scale and
it's got those little kind of overlapping flat, kind of disky kind of people with little points on them.
Right.
And I can still see some on various branches, even though it's kind of in the middle. So the tip of the branch and in front of it appears to be alive and green. Mm-hmm. Is it over the winter? Did they freeze or die? What is their life cycle?
Yeah,
are they still able to destroy other stuff? Can I rub alcohol, spray them? Wash them, scrape them, I don't know what to do. I've got trees that are 20 years old back there, and I put them to shield myself from seeing the alley, and I'm going to lose the whole row.
Right, right. Probably the big thing, the confusing thing about scale, you know, it's an insect, but there's several different types of scale. And I was trying to figure out which one would be on arborvitae, because I don't typically see a lot of scale on arborvitae. So I don't know, does it look like an oyster shell? Could you give it, looks like a little helmet or?
No, it looks more like a little puffed up, pointy arrowhead kind of thing.
Yeah, sorry, I'm not sure just exactly which scale that is, because they overwinter in different ways, but they're all going to overwinter. Some of them actually overwinter as eggs underneath the female scale. You know, they overwinter in different ways. And the confusing thing about scale is timing is really important on when you spray them. So we really need to get an accurate identification of what scale this is. And so I think it'd be one of those things that, you're here in Urbana, is that correct? If you could actually either send me a picture or actually bring in a sample, and then we can get an accurate identification of which scale it is, and then we can give you the timing of when to spray.
Okay, so you said bring in to you.
Yes, you can bring to the U of I Extension office. We're at 801 North Country Fair Drive. So we're just one block west of Mattis Avenue.
I'm thinking about it. Okay, are you allowed to say the name of a store that you're near with that? Are you in the county fair?
Yeah, we're on Country Fair Drive.
Uh-huh.
And we're just we're in the same building as the Farm Bureau. We're just north of the YMC Family Center. If you make it all the way to Bradley Avenue, then you've gone too far on Country Fair.
Okay. So you're north of the shopping.
Correct.
Okay, I got
north
it.
North of the shopping center, north of County Market, and
okay,
all the
so
county.
Do I put it in a plastic bag?
If you can, that would probably. That's fine. Just put it in a plastic bag, bring in a sample. And that's probably good for anybody who's trying to have anything identified. Sometimes we just really need to see them because so many times it's timing of whatever we're going to end up doing is so important. And scale is absolutely one of those. You do it at the wrong time and you're not going to have a whole lot of effect. So we really need to find out which one it is.
What are your hours? Like Monday through Friday?
Monday through Friday, 8:30 to 5.
And you're there on the lunch hour?
Correct.
All right. Thank you.
Okay,
right,
great. We'll figure that out
Thanks
for you.
For the call. Right. So is the plant clinic, the one that used to be on St. Mary's Road, is it still there? And can you also take stuff there?
Yes, it is still there. It's not open for the season yet.
Oh,
they usually open
like
May 4th or 5th. It's kind of that first week of May. So they're almost open. So after that, certainly people could either send in samples or take samples there. So the U of I Plant Clinic is certainly another option for them. Or certainly their local extension office is good because we actually have what's called a digital diagnostics where the local extension offices can actually take pictures. And then it goes into this mass of people and it gets filled in to the correct person on how to diagnose those. So everybody kind of has that as an option, too, within the state.
Okay. So. Sandy Mason is our guest. She's horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. Once a month, it's always on a Tuesday, she is here to talk about things that grow in the home landscape. And if you have a question, you got a problem, you're not quite sure how to deal with it, or maybe you have a particular place that you'd like to put something, but you're not sure, given the conditions, what might be good, or you know, other kinds of questions that have to do with plant selection, we'll do that too. 333-9455. Toll free, 800-222-9455. And you can send us an email at will-talk@illinois.edu. The next caller is also in Urbana, line two. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
I have two questions. Mm-hmm. The first is, we have a huge pine tree in our backyard that has the branches kind of sweep out, kind of droop. Mm-hmm. And so it makes a huge footprint on our yard. And we'd like to trim the lower branches. Are we too late? Did we need to do this when it was still winter?
So when you say trim, you want to make them shorter, or you want to take them off? Or
we want to take off just the very lowest branches, so that we have a 5-year-old, so they could, you know, they can play under the tree.
Oh, sure, and that's not a problem. You could certainly go ahead and do that now, just to remove them completely.
Okay,
sure, you can do that.
And then the other question is, we're thinking of planting Honeycrisp apple tree. Mm-hmm. Do we need to plant two?
Well, you need to plant another variety that's going to that's going to serve as the pollinator.
Okay.
So, yeah, apples are a little weird in that they have to actually, it's not that you plant two Honeycrisp. You plant a Honeycrisp and then you plant something else that's going to bloom at the same time that can serve as the pollinator. And wherever you buy them, typically they can give you a list, or you can find it online of which other ones will bloom at the same time and will serve as pollinators.
Okay, great.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Okay,
sure.
Very good. On to another Urbana person here, line three. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
I look forward to Tuesdays just for this program.
Oh, you're so nice.
I just walked through Busey Woods, and there are a lot of little wildflowers up. And it occurred to me that it would be nice to use that type of wildflower in the very many shady spots I have at my home. And mm-hmm. I'm wondering if you know of a place that I can get these, or where can I learn more about them, or where do I go past the idea?
Okay. I think you have an excellent idea, and that certainly the wildflowers, they like shade. That's the whole idea for a lot of these wildflowers. Unfortunately, this past Saturday, they actually had some wildflowers for sale at the U of I Hort Club Flower Show. So I know you don't want to hear that you've missed that one just this last Saturday. I know. I feel bad. So for that, as far as any sales, now I have noticed, you know, kind of in some of the garden centers, they do have some shadier plants that are wildflowers, but unfortunately, a lot of the newer, a lot of the early things aren't necessarily part of that. So I think you may have to go online to find these, unfortunately.
Okay.
So yeah, so I just don't know of anybody that's, other than the one person I knew was going to sell things on Saturday. You can certainly check with Grand Prairie Friends. They have their sale on May 7th, I believe. It's that first Saturday in May. It's the day before Mother's Day, whatever that is. I think it's May 7th. And they're going to be out at Lincoln Square Village. And they typically would sell prairie plants, but periodically they do have wildflowers as well. So I would check that sale. And it's just in the morning. I think it runs from like 9 to 12. That Saturday. So those are kind of the local things that I know would probably have a pretty good selection for you. Beyond that, I think you're probably going to have to go online and then just make sure you get someone who's reputable that says that they are nursery grown or something, that they're not actually, you know, digging them up in the wild kind of thing. Yeah, you don't want that part. So.
Thank you very much.
Uh-huh, sure.
All right, very good. Next caller is in Piatt County on our toll-free line four. Hello.
Oh, good morning.
Mm-hmm.
Just supervised a guy who dumped off some topsoil for my raised bed, and I'm so excited, and I heard you talking, and I wanted to know, is it best if, because I just set up my raised bed frame, do you then line the bottom of it, because it's just, you know, over grass? I mean, do you put, like, newspaper down, or can you just dump your topsoil on top of it and go?
You know, there's kind of different ideas. Some people like to put landscape fabric underneath it simply because then it doesn't settle quite as much. If that's not, I put mine just right, because the grass is going to die anyway, so you don't have to worry about the grass. It's just going to die because it gets covered up. Personally, I kind of like the fact that it is in contact with the soil. That way, any microbes and worms or whatever kind of work their way into your raised bed, which is exactly what you want.
Yeah.
So if you're not too worried about settling, or you were, and actually they always seem to settle every year anyway, so you kind of have to add a little bit more, I would just go for it. Great day for it, too.
It
I'm
perfect.
Excited
yes.
for you.
Yes. should I use any amendments, though, or just, you know, mix?
If the really, if the soil looks, you know, really pretty good, and hopefully it does, I do like to add some compost with it, typically. So if you can get compost, like at the Landscape Recycling Center, that's always good. And you can get anywhere from large loads to small loads. They actually have buckets now that you can just, you know, get these buckets, and you pay a small fee, and you can fill those up and put them in your car and dump them in. So depending on how much you need, but I think it's good to add some compost, because then that way you can add that organic matter and increase the organic matter in your soil. So that's a good thing. And it's nice to do it as you're building it so that you can get that compost, you know, into the whole bed.
Okay. And really fast, the second question was that the last caller talked about wildflowers. I did know that when they had the Grand Prairie Friends sale, they were selling the weekend after, sometimes at several weekends at the market. Common Grounds also had some wildflowers.
Oh, good.
I mean, not a whole bunch, but that's where I got a prairie rose. And I looked it up, but it doesn't, I mean, I've let it go, but can do you trim it off or treat it like another rose bush? Or?
Well, you know, for those kind of, typically you wouldn't probably do a lot of pruning on them. I'd prune off anything that's obviously dead and those kind of things. But, you know, if hopefully you have it in kind of an area where you sort of just let it go and be natural.
Okay.
But other than that, you might want to do some trimming on it after it blooms. Then you might want to trim on it if you just really feel like it's getting a little bit too big. But most of those really aren't that big.
Yeah. And then garlic mustard, I saw that you were going to be cleaning up some garlic mustard.
Yeah.
And I was wondering, I have a ton of it. So it doesn't work just to cut off that leafy top, right? I mean, it's still going to grow if you whack it off.
Yeah. And actually, this is one of those things, I'm glad you brought this up, is that the garlic mustard is just now starting. You're really starting to see the nice green rosettes. And when I say nice, nice in a bad way.
Right.
It's not nice in a good way. So these big rosettes are really, you're really seeing those now. And unfortunately, if you just cut those off, it'll actually regrow from the stem, from that root. So you really need to pull them up. But they're pretty easy to pull up. And then the biggest thing is don't let them go to flower. I mean, don't let them set flower. They're biennial, so the first year they form rosettes. So hopefully you can get them when there's still a rosette of leaves, and just leaves, and pull those up. And what you can do is just stick them in a plastic bag and then let them just rot in the bag, and then eventually you could put them in the compost pile. But beyond that, just don't let them flower. And they'll start to flower here very soon.
Oh, okay.
So you want to get them before they flower. And we are doing the Great Garlic Mustard Hunt right now, and if people go to the U of I Extension Champaign County website, they can find those locations where we're actually going out as groups and taking care of garlic mustard. But I know people have it in their backyard, so do your own great garlic
mustard. And it's really easy
hunt.
To identify. You should know what it looks like. It's not hard to know. Once you know what it is, you'll see it everywhere. And I think, Sandy, the thing is you don't want to just pull it up and toss it aside, or pull it up and put it on your compost pile, because it reseeds.
Yes. And even once the seeds start, even once it flowers, the seeds will continue to mature. So you have to somehow make sure that those decompose or something, because just throwing them on the compost pile, they'll still do their thing. And unfortunately, it is in people's backyards. And it is one of those that chokes out wildflowers, native wildflowers, but it'll also choke out your plants, because they have this allelopathic, the same thing that kind of like walnuts and stuff do. They keep other plants from growing. So you don't want it in your backyard, and you certainly don't want it in the local woodland. So.
Okay. Well, thank you so much.
Yeah, good luck.
Thank you. We have some other callers here. We'll talk some more in a minute. Here on the show, throughout the year, we have people who have some particular area of expertise that are here to answer questions. Sandy's here every month. We talk about gardening. Dave Sino is here every month to answer financial questions. Yesterday, Jeff Swearingen was here. He's a family practice doctor. He's on every other month to do a talk to the doctor. We have an auto mechanic. We have a lot of people who are here to try to answer specific questions. And when you call in on the show, you get your question answered. There is no charge. We do not charge a fee We cannot force you to put a quarter in the radio every time you turn it on and you want to hear the shows. What we have to do is periodically sit here and remind listeners that listener support is our most reliable source of the energy that it takes to drive the station. And I'm talking metaphorical here. We're talking about money, the kind of money that it takes to keep the station on the air. So this is one of those times we say, if this station and the programs are important, join us. Be a supporter and make a financial contribution. Les Schulte is here in the studio with me. He spends a lot of his time looking for businesses to support us.
Mm-hmm, I do.
And here right now we want to get individuals to support us.
We do. We want everybody to step up. If you value this program, if you value the opportunities to talk to experts like Sandy throughout the month, throughout the year here on WILL, now we're asking you to help cover the cost of these programs. The number to call is 217-244-9455. With your pledge of support, whatever that might be, it might be a dollar a week, it might be $10 a month, you decide. Put a value on this service, on this community resource, public broadcasting, WILL, access to great authors, wonderful news, and experts right here in your community that you can talk to. Right now we're asking you to make one more phone call, 217-244-9455, or just go online to willpledge.org and make your contribution to this community resource, WILL. We want to thank Dan Anderson from Milford, who's made a pledge of support. Thanks, Dan. We've had another pledge come in from Ashcombe. Thank you very much for your pledge of support.
It's just, you know, I think we want to stress what we're trying to do here, and that is to be a kind of community service organization. And we've been doing that for a long time, ever since 1922. As a matter of fact, for a very long time.
When David started.
When I started. And back then it was in black and white. Now it's in color. And the thing is that the ways that we provide the programs have changed over time. You know, and there was no internet in 1922. But what we're doing now is we're trying to use different avenues to provide this, in many ways, the same kind of information. And I have been here now doing this show for 30 years.
Oh, 30 years.
Okay. This is the 30th anniversary year of this show. And I'm really pleased that we have been providing, I think, a pretty consistently high-quality product here for all those years, live every day, 2 hours every day, and give people a chance not only, I hope, to learn things and to hear things that they think are fun and interesting, and also to call in. And if they have questions, we put them in touch with somebody who has the answer. And we're here every day, and we do it without commercial interruption. But the thing that we have to stress is that the reason we can do that is that folks who listen and appreciate the programs, also support them with their dollars.
That's right, David. And we want to thank everyone who has called, who's called this past year, and made their contributions, their pledges of support. Thank you very much. If it's time for you to renew, now would be a great time to show your support for a program like Focus and all of the programs you use here on WILL. Renew that contribution. Maybe you made a $60 contribution last year. Maybe you can make a $75 this year. We would appreciate that. It would go a long way to helping pay for the programs that you use and enjoy and expect to be here on WILL. Or join us as a new friend. If you've never made a contribution before, step up to the plate and take that first swing. You'll like it.
All right. Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. I cut you right off.
Oh,
here.
I was going to do the phone number, 217. They would, well, what should I do? Now that you've got me convinced, call 217-244-9455 or online at willpledge.org.
All right. Thanks, thank you, Les. This is Focus. I'm David Inge, and the guest this morning, Sandy Mason. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension, Champaign County. She's on the program every month on a Tuesday, and we answer questions that have to do with lawn and garden care, things that are in the home landscape. And again, I do want to mention a special thing we're doing here for the first time, as after the show, for a half an hour, for 30 minutes, Sandy will be hosting a live chat so she can answer additional questions, respond to listener comments. And if you want to join the chat, just go to our website, WILL.illinois.edu. And here's a caller, been very patient with us, on our line one in Champaign. Hello.
Yes, hello.
Yes.
I had a question about my lawn is going gangbusters right now, and I'd like to do a sort of top treatment because I've got a few bare spots around a maple and an oak tree. Some they stand off a little bit. There's some beds around it, but does Sandy recommend topsoil or like a composted mulch, like mushroom mulch? What would be the best strategy here? I just want to even it out. I've got a few spots that are kind of barren, but the rest is growing. I think it would fill in if I put a little treatment on there.
Mm-hmm. Actually, compost is really good, to be honest with you. Just to do a very, you can do a thin layer in some areas. You still want the grass to grow. And then in other areas, do a little bit thicker. But it actually is a pretty good technique. It's really good for, even for things like thatch control. It helps to sort of decompose that thatch from above as opposed to just always having to worry about it from below. And I would go with compost. And actually, I think the Landscape Recycling Center has it on sale right now.
Yeah, that's right. I saw that. It's always just wondering.
On sale.
This is the time when you're really optimistic about your lawn.
Either that, or I've had several people say, "Oh, I can't believe my lawn looks so bad."
And then it's downhill through the rest of the summer. Okay, I would try this. I'll try the compost. Thanks for your help.
Sure.
All right.
Sure.
Thank you. Other calls are welcome. 333-9455 and toll free 800-222-9455. Well, now actually, it also is the time if you're thinking about possibly doing some stuff with lawn. You're thinking about doing weed control, fertilization. Right about now, the 12th of April is the time when you're really going to want to think about doing it.
Well, I think that, and especially even for things like, I know a lot of people had trouble last year. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was perfect environment, perfect weather for crabgrass, and not really all that great for the Kentucky bluegrass and perennial ryegrass, are good grasses. So, unfortunately, crabgrass really took over quite a bit last year. I had a lot of people complain about nimblewill this year, which is a perennial weedy grass. It's one of those, it's a warm season grass, so it doesn't green up as fast as Kentucky blue. So it tends to have these kind of beigey patches in your yard of this kind of fine textured grass. And if you look around town, everybody has it to some extent. Eventually it greens up, but it's very obvious in the spring and the fall. So this is a perfect time to be thinking about reseeding. So even if you want to go ahead and reseed those bare areas maybe that you might have, maybe where crabgrass might have been coming up, you can certainly do that now. So through the month of April is actually a pretty good time to be thinking about reseeding. So that would be a good thing. Now, the other thing is a lot of times people like to put their pre-emergent crabgrass control on now, which is good. But just to remember, you can't do both. There's only one chemical where you actually can do both, as in plant good grass and then also try to control your crabgrass using a pre-emergent. So you have to be very careful on, so you almost have to make that, or you do need to make that commitment one way or the other. And what I would tell people really for the most part is that, you know, weeds are always going to come into bare areas. They're going to come in anything that's bare. So if you have a bare area maybe next to the sidewalk or the driveway or something, that's where you're going to get crabgrass and all the weeds to come in. So if you can do something to not have those bare areas, maybe go ahead and reseed right now and really try to thicken up your lawn. You can overseed, just try to thicken the overall health, the density of the lawn. That can help sometimes to keep weeds out. So really thinking about thickening up the lawn can help. You may find those areas that, you know, where maybe people just walk through all the time or the car always goes off. Maybe it's time to think about some kind of hardscape and actually use, you know, rock or pavers or something, and just realize that's always going to be a bare area, so I'm just going to forget it and I'm going to go ahead and do something else so I don't have to worry about quite so many weeds in those kind of areas too.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, it's something where we're starting to see a lot of broadleaf weeds. Of course, dandelions are starting to bloom and stuff. And so people may want to think about that as well if they want to go ahead and try to control some of those broadleaf weeds, if they choose to. I know a lot of people that just enjoy the yellow flowers and not think about it too much.
Well, I don't know if enjoy. Maybe you just think, oh, well.
It's pretty.
It's there, you know, it's not where. It depends on how much grooming, I guess, you want to do and what you can live with.
Right.
Well, let me ask you about grass selection, because it seems like we have a little bit of a problem in that sometimes here, some parts of the year are cool and wet, and sometimes they can be really dry and really hot. So, you know, April we have one set of conditions, and July you've got another set of conditions.
Right.
Is there a variety of grass that's pretty good? It's going to be good all around, or how do you deal with that range of conditions?
Yeah, unfortunately, it is one of those things, and we're really at that point where we have what are called cool season grasses, so things like Kentucky bluegrass and perennial ryegrass and the finely fescues, and they like the cooler weather, so they're going to green up early and they're going to do their thing. But come July and August, if it's hot and dry, they just naturally go dormant. That's what they're supposed to do. That's what they're programmed to do, is just go dormant, and it goes brown, and a lot of times people just really don't like that look. then you have to water it if you truly want to keep it green. So you have to decide on that. And so I think you kind of have to decide on what spectrum you want. We have warm season grasses, so that would be things like zoysia grass is probably be a typical lawn-type grass that people might think of that is a warm season grass. It doesn't green up until May-ish. It likes warm weather. But it does look green in July and August when it's hot and dry. It does its thing. So sometimes people like that, but a lot of times people don't like the fact that it stays brown when everybody else's lawn is turning green, and it will brown up again early in this, you know, fall once it starts to cool off. It'll kind of do that beigey thing too. But I had somebody tell me one time they like zoysia grass because they feel like they don't have to mow as much because it doesn't green up till later, and then it goes dormant really quick. So you kind of have to decide on what those things you kind of think about. But you may just decide, you know, sometimes it's the best just to let it go dormant in July and August. If it's hot and dry, just let Kentucky bluegrass and perennial rye, just let them go dormant. And then once the weather gets cooler, wetter, then they'll go ahead and green up again. Yeah. So yeah, I know it's hard. We don't have those kind of that perfect grass for the most part. We do have some things like what are called turf-type tall fescues, which I always have to think about before I say it. So these are tall fescues, and the nice thing is about those is that they tend to be better for those kind of lower maintenance, what we might consider lower maintenance, as in you're not going to water it as much as you might think, or you may not water it at all. You may not fertilize it or fertilize it very little. And tall fescue, the turf type, tends to do very well in those kind of conditions. But it looks different. You know, it doesn't have that kind of blue-green that we think of with Kentucky bluegrass. And I will say in part of my yard I have the turf-type tall fescue, and this time of year it's growing like gangbusters. So it actually grows a little bit faster than Kentucky blue when the weather is really good. So I will tell you, you can't, you know, maybe wait quite as long when it comes to mowing it in that spring and fall when it's doing well, but it does stay greener longer in July and August. Mm-hmm. So people may want to think about, you know, those kinds of things where maybe that is a good option for them, is to look at maybe a different grass species.
Okay, well, a little past the midpoint here. We certainly have time for questions. Sandy Mason is our guest, horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. She's here once a month on a Tuesday to talk about lawn and garden care. And you got questions, you got a problem needs to be solved, or you have that spot. You have a spot in your yard. You say, I want to put something here. And I can tell you about the conditions, and maybe I can give you some kind of idea what I'd like to have. Would you suggest something? And she can try to do that. And in all of that, 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455. And if you would like, you can always send us an email, write us at will-talk@illinois.edu. I was reading the other day, it was an article about landscaping in Arizona. And it was making the observation that, you know, there are some people that, because it's desert, they decide, okay, I'm going to have a desert landscape. But then there are people who, for whatever reason, they really want to have a lawn. Mm-hmm. The problem is, though, that in some places where people live, there are rules about how you maintain your yard. And if your grass goes brown, you get in trouble. So there are actually people who have started businesses during those times of the year when things are really dry and lawns go dormant and brown. They go around and they spray them. They spray green paint, and they have a special vegetable base. It's environmentally safe paint, and they go. And so you can actually have someone come and spray your lawn.
Something seems wrong about that. I don't know what it is.
Well, the other thing that some people actually do is apparently there are also people who have gone to AstroTurf.
Oh, something seems wrong about that.
Their lawn. Yeah, I think so, too. I think if you're going to live in a desert, you have your landscape conform to the landscape.
Right.
You know, don't try to bring something from someplace else that it doesn't make any sense.
Right. And it really does. And because there's reasons why those plants are particularly native there, is because they do well in those kind of situations where they're, you know, go through that hot and dry period. And certainly Kentucky bluegrass and perennial ryegrass, you know, as we just talked about, here, even in July and August, it can go brown. So I can't imagine trying to grow it in Arizona, I guess, so that's why they get out the spray paint.
Yeah, that's right.
I think I would go with something else. I don't know about that.
Spray paint. Yeah,
you just have to. I think probably the big thing is just to embrace the native plants, no matter where you are. Is really sort of, and to me, it just adds to the palette of where you are and the types of plants that you can use. Is really to find those ones that are native, and maybe sometimes it takes a little bit more effort to find those, but And we just talked about Grand Prairie Friends having their plant sale, and we're very lucky that we have a group like that that has those native plants for sale, and so they're readily available for people, so that's good.
Well, here's an email question about grass, and we'll see if what you have to say. The person says, in their lawn, they have little tufts of tightly growing grass, some about 6-inch circles up to maybe a foot. And he says, when I mow over them, they seem really tough, almost hemp-like, where it seems to fray rather than cut. Wants to know, what is it? He says, I'll probably just dig it out, but I don't want it to keep popping up. Does that sound like anything you...
Yeah, what I suspect it is the pasture-type tall fescue. Because the pasture-type tall fescue can end up being a perennial weed in Kentucky bluegrass lawns simply because it looks so different. It tends to grow faster. It tends to be very clumpy. It's a very kind of tough blade. So that's probably why they're noticing that it's fraying rather than cutting. So I have a feeling it's probably that even though it's also tall fescue, it tends to be more of the pasture type, which is a very thick blade, wider blade than what you would see with the turf-type tall fescue. So there is a difference. But I will say probably, and they've hit upon the one thing, because it is a perennial, we don't have a whole lot of options for control. You really don't have options as far as killing it and not also killing your good grass if you want to use a herbicide. So you really have to dig it out for the most part. Usually with tall fescue, you can do a pretty good job of digging it out because it tends to be very clump-like. And then to go right in, this would be a perfect time to do that. Dig it out and then come right back in and reseed those areas, and hopefully that'll take care of it for them.
Okay, hope that helps. Back to the phones for us and someone in Urbana and line one. Hello.
Hello. I'm calling because I have a problem area in my yard, and I gave up growing grass in it a long time ago, and that's fine. I've planted prairie plants. But the problem I run into is trying to determine what kind of prairie plant is best suited for the location. It's a low spot, and so sometimes it will have standing water in it for a considerable amount of time. And last year was particularly bad. But then in summer, it's baked. I mean, if it doesn't rain, it's very dry. It's very hard packed. And I just don't, when you look at prairie plants and they say that they can grow in dry or they're upland or they're moist areas, is that tied to a certain time of year? Or how do I best try and find something that'll grow there, or do I just plant things and see what lives?
Sometimes that's my technique, just plant things and see what lives. But I will tell you, now, are you here in Urbana or Champaign? Or?
I'm in the country in Urbana.
Okay.
Urbana area.
I was going to say, I know this, talking about the Grand Prairie Friends, you know, is a group local and they're having
the
plants.
Right.
It's actually a great opportunity because they can talk to you about which ones. Because naturally, natively, this would be exactly what would happen in some prairie situations where they have these kind of low areas, gets wet in the springtime, and then dries up in the summer. So there certainly are prairie plants out there that will tolerate that or actually even thrive in those kind of conditions. So I think if you have a chance to go to a plant sale on May 7th, they can help you pick out some plants that will do well in that area.
Okay.
Or just look for maybe some that say mesic prairie plants. If you go online and kind of look at, they should be able to give you some lists, and mesic just
mesic,
kind of means wet to mesic,
right,
or something like that.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, good
All
luck.
Right, very good. Well, again, we have about 10 minutes left on the show, maybe a little bit less. Somebody has a question, they can call us, 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455. Anything in the way of things that you might want to talk about? Any events coming up? Or maybe it's that you would want to remind people, okay, here we are at this point in the year. Here, if you hadn't thought about doing these things, now would be the time. And certainly we've talked about turf stuff.
Right. But also, this is the activity time. This is when, if you're really going to be making some changes, I would do it now. If you have things that, like any perennials for the most part, other than maybe irises and peonies, this would be the time to divide them, move them around. You know, it got too big or whatever, and you decide you want to put it in another spot, this would be doing it. It's easy digging at this point, and this is the perfect time to do it as they're first starting to come up. So that's really a great opportunity to do that for you. Also, if you have any kind of pruning, I'd be getting it done here real soon.
Because
you really, even even though they're starting to bud out, and it's still okay. But you really don't want to wait until they're completely leafed out and then decide you're going to prune at that exact time. So this would be the time to be doing any pruning. But probably the one thing always to keep in mind is that for those things that bloom before mid-June, they're blooming on wood that was produced last year. So they actually have their flower buds now. So you would be sacrificing blooms. So if you want to go ahead and prune now, you would be sacrificing blooms on your lilac or anything like that. So typically anything that's going to be blooming before mid-June, you'd want to prune those right after they flower. So that's a good time. So then you don't have to sacrifice the flowers for the most part. But also sometimes I just sacrifice the flowers because I want a better looking shrub. So I've done this with red twig dogwoods because I just hack them down to the ground. Maybe I shouldn't say hack. That doesn't sound like a very professional term. I gently prune them down to the ground. So there may be some that people really want to do that. Red twig dogwood looks better if you do that. Privet looks better if you do that. A lot of honeysuckles. Hopefully you don't have too many honeysuckles out there, but they look better if you do that. So sometimes actually sacrificing those flowers is also a good idea. So even some of like the brighter wreaths by and sometimes I just sacrifice them and just, you know, chop them down to the ground, and they look so much better.
Okay. A couple callers here. Let's see. Ern Strasburg, how about that? Line 4. Hello.
Hello.
Yes, hi.
Good morning to you.
Hey.
Good morning.
I've got a question about yellow squash zucchini plants. Late season, there's an insect that appears on there. They seem to lay a lot of eggs on the undersides of the leaves, and then they are probably a juice type of sucking type of insect, and the plant usually goes downhill pretty rapidly after that, and I was wondering if there's any way that they could be taken care of where a person could still eat the squash or zucchini from the plants without harming, you know, having some insecticidal-based product put on them.
Yeah, so what do they look like? Is it squash bugs?
I assume they're probably squash bugs. They're kind of a grayish-white color, more gray. Sometimes when they're adult, they get more black color to them.
Yeah, it's probably.
They're probably about the shape of a stink bug is the best way that I can, triangular.
Right. Probably squash bugs. Amazingly enough, on squash is squash bugs. but what you can do, and actually they're kind of difficult to control even with insecticides, but what you can do is, you're absolutely right, they lay their eggs on the undersides of the leaves. So if you can see that little cluster of kind of reddish-brown leaves and then squish those, just mechanically squish those, that helps immensely. They also will, if you put like even, you know, boards or shingles or anything like that, what they actually do is they'll hang out underneath it. When it gets really hot, they'll hang out underneath those boards, and you can actually then flip those over when you're ready, flip those over, and then take another board and squish them. You know, that's
good,
or somehow get rid of them that way. So sometimes just sort of collecting them and then really looking at the undersides of the leaves. You've already figured out kind of when you start seeing them, kind of later in the summer, and just start flipping over the leaves and start looking for those insect eggs, and then they squish very easily.
Yeah. They're little red clusters.
Yes, they're little clusters of eggs, so they're very obvious underneath there. But unfortunately, you do have to keep sort of flipping over the leaves. But that goes a long way to controlling them.
Okay, so put the boards down.
Put the boards on
season.
Right, and that'll collect the adults, you know, as they start to grow. Yeah, that'll help to collect the adults. And then just sort of looking for them kind of that late season and really start going from there. But it's a tough one.
I presume they overwinter in the soil?
Actually, they overwinter on plant debris, I believe. So it would be one of those things, and maybe you do that already, where you just clean off your garden every fall, I assume. Just trying to get rid of that plant debris and then actively composting it or something where it's not just sitting around where they can come out from there.
Okay. Well, I appreciate it.
Good luck.
Very good. We'll try to do at least one more person, and that would be Ridge Farm, line 1. Hello.
Hi. Gary Rummels at Ridge Farm. Enjoy your program. I may have got on the program a little bit late, but the problem we're running into in our yard is there is a flat-leafed, kind of waxy, it's a purplish shape, and wherever the grass is thin, it seems like it will take over and choke out all the rest of the grass. We have used glyphosate, we've used Weed Be Gone 2,4-D, and we're looking for something that we can kill it that it won't come back. But most of the time when we burn the top off, it'll be back within just a few days. And we don't want to put anything on there that's going to walk across the yard and kill the rest of the grass. We're just kind trying to figure out what to do next.
So I'm trying to figure out what it is. So it's blooming right now, or it's when you say
no,
it's...
There's, it's just like a flat purplish leaf. I want to call it Creeping Charlie, but I'm not really sure that's what it is.
Yeah, we're back to that whole identification thing, because probably the biggest thing is just finding out when it's really active. If it's actively growing, then things like, you know, Weed Be Gone and those kind of things, those 2,4-D type killers, should have been taken care of it. So that makes me wonder a little bit about really what it is, and just to make sure that it is a perennial and not something that's coming back every year from seed, which things like Weed Be Gone.
Well, it's very shallow-rooted. So usually we just have to pull it by hand, but that takes so long, and there's so much of it. And once it gets started, it just seems like it spreads really fast.
Yeah, you might look at some pictures of things like Creeping Charlie, because that would be a very common weed that we would have. And it has kind of a bluish flower on it. It does eventually bloom. And for it, it is one of those that some of the 2,4-D type killers will do a pretty good job on it, but you have to do it more than once. So you have to pay attention when it read the label, use it according to label directions. When it says you can reapply it, then reapply it. And it's usually 6 to 8 weeks later. So, but number one, I'd make sure that you get accurate identification of what it is.
Okay.
And we'll go from there.
I appreciate it.
Sure.
All right, very good. Okay,
Thank you.
At least one more. We'll go to rural Vermilion County, line two. Hello.
Hi, I have two questions related to yew trees.
Mm-hmm.
And the first one is this. We noticed that foundation plantings, which are probably about 3.5 feet tall, are browning severely.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks like disease, but it occurred to me later, maybe it's just a tough, cold, long winter.
Mm-hmm. So these are plants that have been there for a while?
They have. They've been there since probably 1983.
Okay. We really don't have a lot of things that kill off yews. We really, they tend to not get a whole lot of insect and disease issues. But the one thing that they do not tolerate is wet feet. They hate wet soils, especially wet soils in the wintertime. So I really wonder about, you know, we had a couple of wet years there, and also I'd wonder about, you know, where your downspouts are coming out, those kinds of things. If it's winter damage, you'll notice it just on the kind of the windward side where you know it's going to get the most wind. So usually there's kind of a discrepancy on where it's appearing. If it's all over the plant, then I'd really be wondering about some root rot issues because it's too wet.
Okay.
I don't know if that's an issue for you.
Well, they look worse on the north side of the house than they do the east and south side. But curiously, the whole house is tucked in behind a really effective windbreak.
Mm-hmm.
And also, they're planted on a sloping surface, kind of an earth berm around this house. So I'm going to guess it's not a wet foot problem.
Yeah, you wouldn't think that. I mean, you wouldn't think that. You're absolutely right. Unless I don't know if you have high clay content soils. It may be one of those things where you just kind of wait and see if it puts on some new green growth, because obviously if it's a winter issue, then usually they'll go ahead and put on some green growth, and eventually those will sort of fill in. But we just don't have a whole lot of insect and disease issues. They get a black vine weevil, but that's mainly just sort of damage on the needles themselves or on the leaves themselves where you see kind of issues with that. So
We'll wait and see. Yeah. My second question is this, I've got some farm building foundation plantings which are overgrown, and I'd like to cut these yews back. That's kind of like a yew hedge. But it's difficult to do. If you cut them down 6 inches, then they're probably 3.5 or 4 feet tall, a bit overgrown. It's tough to do. If you cut them off 6 inches above the ground, it's a lot easier because you could actually use a chainsaw. What's your suggestion?
So you're just trying to get them a lot shorter than what they are right now.
I'm trying to get them, back under control.
Okay. So the one thing with yews, they're one of the few evergreens that we actually can do is a pretty hard pruning on them, and they will go ahead and send out some needles. Now, with you can actually do a pretty heavy prune on a yew, but they're going to look funny. So if you prune them down and you see a few green, if you look in there, you'll see a few green needles and stuff in there. So those have a chance to go ahead and come out of that. But they're going to look funny for probably 2 or 3 years. It's going to look like stems with a couple of needles on them. So what I would probably do is just think about it over a period of time. Cut them back a few inches now, and then next year figure, okay, I'm going to cut them back a few more inches, and just sort of maybe over a three-year period try to get them smaller rather than trying to have them small now, unless you just are willing to sort of live with that kind of gangly lankiness over a couple of year period.
Well, it's an enormous job because I've probably got 50 or 60 lineal feet in.
Wow.
So,
wow. Are you sure you don't want to prune at ground level and sort of forget the whole... No, I'm kidding.
Yeah.
But yeah, so yeah, I think you just have to decide on how you want to do that. But electric hedge trimmers usually do a pretty good job if you just want to take them down a few inches.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Well, right. We're going to have to finish up there. My apologies here. We have one more caller we can't take. But as something special, a bonus addition to Focus today, starting at 11 and from 11 to 11:30, Sandy will be online. She'll be hosting a live chat so she can answer additional questions, respond to comments. So for people who can do that, can go online, go to our webpage, will.illinois.edu, and you can join the chat that way. So maybe we can answer some more questions. And in a month, Sandy will be back here on the radio, and we'll do it again. And you can also look for her on Illinois Gardener Thursday nights, 7 o'clock on WILL TV. Thank you.
Yes, thank you.